You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
It's Wednesday, which means it's Executive Lounge time. And this week, I have the privilege of speaking to the CEO and a principal officer at Fed Health, that's Jeremy Yatt, to just get a sense of what he does when he's not running one of the big medical aid schemes of the country. Good evening, Jeremy. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with your background. How did you get into medical aid? Where's home? How did this all come together?
Yeah, good evening, and thanks for having me. I'm really privileged. So I qualified as a lawyer, and this was back in the early 90s, and I liked law. I was in a company that was involved in insurance litigation. But I was approached by a colleague of mine who was working for a medical aid administrator, and they were looking for a legal advisor, and I wasn't all that interested. I went for the interview, but after the interview, and I was sitting back in my office, I thought, you know, that sounds really interesting. So I quickly phoned back and said, I am interested, despite all appearances. And they hired me. And I've been very grateful ever since, because one of the things I didn't like about law, I loved the intellectual challenge. And I'd got into it because I thought I would, you know, I'd watched LA Law and I thought I would make a difference. But I realized law is actually for rich people, corporates. And I found in medical aid a sense of validation, because what you're dealing with there are people's health or their loved ones and money. And these are two very important issues for people. And by being involved, and I felt I could make a difference. And that's been my motivation ever since. I'm getting close to retirement age, I suppose, but I still absolutely love what I do. I love the ability to structure things that will help people. Not everyone is always happy with my decisions, but that's how life goes. You know, you can't please everyone. But I like to think that I have made quite a big difference in the lives of our members.
What's a misconception people have about the medical aid industry?
The most important one is that people think it's like an insurance company. And unfortunately, when you have entities like Discovery Health and Momentum Health, which also have Discovery Life and Discovery Insure and all those, people sort of conflate them and think, yeah, it's just another product line of that company. And it's not. So a medical scheme is actually closer to a Stockfell. In the good old days, you had things called cooperatives or mutuals. And these were sort of vehicles where people would put money into, and in the event of a rainy day, of a crisis, then they could use those funds for their benefit. And obviously it got very structured around how much you could use and when you could use it and the circumstances. But it's medical schemes can't be bought or sold. They don't have owners. They are effectively owned by the members, and they're run by a board of trustees who are elected by the members. So, you know, you can't list them on the stock exchange, you can't sell it. And the sole purpose of a medical aid is to defray the medical expenses of its members. Obviously, it has to stay commercially viable. We have to make sure that we are around to meet those obligations, and they can be onerous because medical expenses are just sort of rising exponentially. But we are certainly not profit-driven. And when we say we're not paying for a claim, it's not because we want the money, that I want the money for my year-end bonus. I don't get, you know, bonuses based on the stock price or whatever. So a lot of people have this idea that it's some kind of financial service industry entity, but it's not.
Jeremy, what does a day look like in your life? You mentioned that you make some unpopular decisions. Take us through a typical sort of 9-to-5 that doesn't have endless meetings.
So there's the ups. The good parts are when you are discussing maybe with an employer group how you're going to structure the healthcare benefits for their employees, or when you're working with doctor groupings to say how a particular procedure, maybe a new medicine or a new treatment protocol has developed, and you're looking, how are we going to fund this? So an example might be in cancer therapy, you know, it's commonly been chemotherapy, which can have terrible side effects and often doesn't work. But now there's developments in immunotherapy, which have been very, very promising. The problem is that's very, very expensive. So we always feel like we want to fund treatment that will work, and we want to find ways to fund that treatment. We can't just fund everything. It just can't. We would be out of business pretty quickly. So the unpopular decisions are when you tell someone, look, your doctor has said you need to have this operation. Our medical advisors say, yeah, you can, but it's actually, there's no proof that it will work, and it's very expensive. And we're reluctant to then approve that procedure. We're reluctant to fund it. And that can leave people feeling disgruntled because they feel, I pay all this money to my medical aid, and now in my hour of need, you won't need it. On the flip side, we have very many cases. I mean, you know, you just have to look at the annual financial statements of any medical aid to see how much money is spent on claims. And perhaps I need to make this point, is that an insurance company, an acceptable loss ratio is around about 50%. Our loss ratio, or our claims ratio, is about 92%. So of every rand that a member pays us, 92 cents is spent on claims, and the rest is spent on administration, non-health expenditure. It's big. So we are trying to maximize the money that we get from our members, because that's our only source of revenue, other than investment income, to benefit our members. So structuring a medical aid benefit design to meet those needs affordably, or as affordable as possible, obviously is different. Definitions for that is a big thrill. It's a big kick. I love it when we can do that.
What are you currently reading, Jeremy?
Yeah, so you won't believe this, but I've actually been reading my old Tintins that I had as a child. It started off when we remembered some incident, and one thing led to another, and I've been plowing my way through them. So they're hysterical. But before that, during that, I've actually got a Christopher Hitchens book that would probably upset a lot of viewers, but its title is God Is Not Great.
That's quite interesting. Jeremy, let me get your thoughts on the NHI bill. You're in the medical space. This is obviously a material kind of bill, and the success of this would have a material impact on your business. Just from a personal level, do you think this is the right thing to be doing?
So let's be clear here. The NHI bill, as it stands, Section 33 is an existential threat to medical schemes. It basically puts us out of business. Now, the fact that private healthcare in South Africa is virtually unaffordable, and that many people aren't having access to it, is a problem. No one's in denial about this. No one is confused. Where we disagree fundamentally is the mechanism created by NHI, and very clever people without any vested interest, as is always claimed by government functionaries, have pointed out where these shortcomings are in the bill and why it won't work, why it won't achieve what they want it to achieve. But these concerns have been brushed aside, I guess, in the interest of politics and, wanting to be seen to be doing something rather than grappling with the hard nature of some healthcare funding model. If you look at countries around the world, it's a challenge. No one gets it right, and the ones that get it better have very high rates of industrialization and economic growth. And so for them, it's easier, and yet it's hard. They struggle. Those countries that you could all point to, Sweden and Netherlands or whatever, struggle with it, and yet, yeah, we are trying to do something similar in a relatively short time frame, and then for me personally, the biggest challenge, the amount of money that's involved, and with our government's track record of putting their finger into that particular piggy bank to use that money, it would be irresistible for our current government. They would, that money would very quickly find its way into other channels. And I'm not saying that you know, the private sector is squeaky clean or that it would do it better, because we know that there needs to be regulatory change to the way in which medical aids are run and the way in which healthcare is provided. But this is not the way to do it.
Reform is needed. We just need to do it the right way. That's quite an interesting take on the NHI bill. And I think a lot of industry professionals sort of second that kind of opinion. Jeremy, before I let you go, if you could eat one thing for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Bacon and eggs.
Simple.
Breakfast is my best meal of the day. I wake up and I look forward to a good breakfast, and then lunch is fine and dinner is a non-event.
Breakfast being the most important meal of the day. We'll leave it at that, Jeremy. Thanks so much for those insights. Jeremy Yatt, who is the CEO and Principal Officer at Fed Health, joining me for this week's Executive Lounge segment.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.